started.
Cheers, Bertie. Welcome to another episode of the Witterings Fitness Podcast. You can hear Bertie's here in the background, but more importantly, I've got Rachel and Claire with me today. I'm Rory McDonald. You usually hear me on here with Ben Price, but it's nice to be surrounded by two attractive women instead of Ben this week. It's menopause month, so we're talking about early menopause and all things related. Now, clearly I've got two experts here who know more about this than I do. Before we get into the specifics, Rach, you want to give us a little background? What have you done before? What are you doing right now? What's your favourite hobby? And then I'm going to pass over to Claire.
What have I done before?
Yeah,
life.
Life-wise, give us a bit of backstory.
So before I worked in events, I had done for 20 years, loved the lifestyle, and then packed it all in and moved to the South Coast.
Brilliant. Great. What's your favourite hobby?
Kayaking. Love getting out on the water, especially over during sunset. Amazing. Absolutely love it.
Claire, tell us a bit about you.
I wasn't prepared for this question. I've had a corporate job for a very long time. I recently left the fully employed rat race and have just been starting up on my own, and I split my time between here and Portugal.
Amazing. Can you tell us a bit about the incredible camp you ran over the summer in Portugal?
Oh, yeah. But in case my cousin listens, I can't take all the credit for it, because it was her camp and I helped her. So, we have a summer camp for children or teenagers, anyone from about the age of 9 to 17. And it's a summer unplugged where you just come, get back to being kids in the way that we remember being children. So playing on the beach, climbing the mountains, doing things that empower you. Make friends, stay up too late, all that kind of stuff. But it's a really broad spectrum of kids from different backgrounds and places. And it's really rewarding to see them come together and leave having made sort of memories for a lifetime and firm friends.
Great. Sounds excellent. Good stuff. So what I think I'll do is I'll ask some really sort of ill-informed questions and you guys are going to kind of put me right. I think that feels like the right way to run this. Now, as an outsider looking in, i.e. a man who won't experience menopause, certainly not in the same way that ladies you have or other women do, we talk about male andropause another day on another podcast because it is a thing, but that's not for today. What do I know about the menopause? I know about Davina McCall TV shows and books. I know what my mum went through, and that's about it. So my understanding is a woman gets to a certain age, somewhere around 50, at which point kind of menstruation comes to an end, estrogen drops in the body, and it brings on all sorts of symptoms that are most commonly kind of known, especially to men, would be maybe hot flashes, things to do with mood, irritability. There's loads of old corny jokes, isn't there, about women going through menopause and mood and irritability. I know from my mum's experience, it really impacted her sleep. But that's the, and everyone's favourite thing to say on a podcast, vaginal dryness. Got to get that out on a podcast. These are the things I know, right? But there's so much more, and I know the experience that you two have had is not typical of, you know, is there a typical menopause experience? Actually, that's a good question. Is there a typical menopause experience, or is that like...
I don't know. I think that is a good question. I think we've both had not typical experiences, so I've not really spoken to many people that have had a typical experience. I think especially early menopause is just not talked about.
Yeah, hence why we're talking about it.
Exactly. There's a known group of symptoms, isn't there, that you can sort of tick off a list that most people will have one or a few of, and there's a usual age from which it comes on.
Okay, but what's sort of interesting for today is the maybe like the atypical nature of this. So early menopause is, that's a common term, isn't it? It gets kind of thrown around.
Yeah.
Now, does that tell the whole story? I can see, Rachel, on the board, you've got premature ovarian insufficiency written up. Is that the same thing as early menopause, or is this something different?
I think it's the same. I think people will... So the menopause is when your menstrual cycle stops for a period of 12 months, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong.
That's what I believe, yeah.
And that usually an early menopause, from a quick Google, says kind of anyone under 45.
Okay.
So I was diagnosed at the time with premature ovarian failure, which is now insufficiency, at age 31.
Okay.
So that would be considered, you know, pretty unusually early.
Okay, do you want to tell us a bit more about that, Claire?
Yeah, so it was a bit of a surprise. I'd had a fairly regular cycle, and then just over the space of a year, it became more irregular, and then it stopped. At the time, my partner and I were trying for children. So we'd gone to the doctors and we were referred to a clinic, and they started sort of doing all the usual tests, and they sort of ruled out anything with my partner. So the spotlight turned around and was facing me.
Yeah.
So we monitored the situation, I think, for another year, had some more tests. And at that point, all of my blood work and everything came back saying that I was postmenopausal. So it sort of happened supremely quickly, not really knowing, I don't know, perimenopause and menopause must have all happened in that sort of flash period of time for me. And
so
all of the symptoms
about
came on.
1 year, you went through everything in under a year.
2 years probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 years probably.
Huge shock, I imagine.
Huge shock. And aside from the physical things, I think it's the life impact that it has on someone who's 30, where you're thinking, oh, I'm going to have children. Oh, all my friends are going to have children. We're going to do this. We're going to, I don't know. And your relationship, you know, you may love each other, but if you fundamentally want different things, then there's like a reassessment that needs to be done, right? So I think now, looking back on it, some 10 years on, for me, the physical symptoms, actually, they fall by the wayside. I can't remember them so much. I just remember the sort of Gwyneth Paltrow sliding doors moment that happened.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden, that was my path. And then, okay, this is a new path, and what do I want it to look like? At the time, I wasn't thinking about what I wanted it to look like. I was too busy looking over my shoulder, feeling really gutted about what I felt had been taken from me.
So you're clearly really gutted, and it was a huge shock, and it all happened very quickly. How was that? What was that kind of emotional tumult
like? It was tough. So there was about 2 years that passed, and then my partner and I split up, and I was just sort of carrying on working and doing life, and then my period came back. And that was really unexpected. So I was an app called Clue at the time, and I basically, every time I had a cycle, I entered it into Clue. Exactly 12 months later, I rang up my doctor, the same doctor, and I was like, I've had my period for 12 months. I can't be menopausal now, can I? I can't. So he's like, come back in, we'll do some tests. So I went back in, and literally like the next day, they sent me to the Runnymede Hospital, and they did a whole screening of tests. And they did all the sort of physical internal examinations and everything as well. I went back to see them a week later. And they said, you're not postmenopausal. Your body is normal, as would someone's of your age be.
But did they have an explanation? Did they know? Do you know what that move was to then have it reversed?
There's lots of theories and speculations. And is it stress? Wasn't it stress? Was it this? Was it that? I mean, no idea.
Yeah.
So they referred me on to another specialist, and she specialised purely in sort of things to do with the menopause, and I went to go see her. And bear in mind, at this point, I now had been basically 4 years thinking I couldn't have children. And I'd done so much work on, like, learning to live with it and accept it and be at peace with it. Maybe not accept, I don't think that's the right word, but be at peace with it.
Sure.
And so I'm sort of looking at my mum going, Mum, like, is this real? Like, might I be able to have kids? So I go see this professor, and she sits me down, she talks me through, and she says, okay, so of 1 in every 100 people have premature ovarian, what are we calling it, insufficiency? Sorry, called it fairly negative.
One in 100. Now,
like that.
I don't mean to interrupt the story, no, but that's quite surprising. Did either of you have any idea it was that common when you started to go through stuff?
No, I definitely didn't.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I was wallowing in self-pity, though, so I probably didn't look outwards. I don't know about you.
No, I'd never even thought about the menopause until it happened to me, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And it wasn't talked about in my family. My mum never talked about going through it, any symptoms, nothing. So it was a completely new territory for me.
Do you think your mum experienced kind of less severe symptoms, or is it a generational thing, we just don't talk about that?
I think a bit of both. My mum also had quite a unique situation as well, and I think she just, people didn't talk about it. And so I don't think her symptoms were as severe, but I also just think it was a taboo subject and nobody talked about it. And she was a career woman and definitely didn't talk about it at work. And
it impacted your career.
Yeah. And so no, it wasn't talked about.
I'm just going to put a verbal place marker down. We're Definitely. Coming back to you. We're at 34 years of age, and we're going to remember. So this idea of not talking about things at work, where are we today in 2023, ladies? I know that perhaps because you've left the corporate world now, both of you, and you're doing other things in more entrepreneurial type spaces, maybe things are different, but what's the view on talking about menopause or early menopause or anything to do with female health at work?
I was still in the corporate space when I went into the menopause, and my work themselves were really supportive. We'd laugh and joke about it. You know, if I'd have brain fog, I'd literally sit in a meeting and go, I've got no idea what any of you are talking about. I'm just going to go and take 10 minutes. But I'd go into lots of external meetings, and that would sometimes be with, quite honestly, like London City bankers and other, you know, very corporate male orientated worlds, and to talk about the menopause and the fact that I was sweating so much, I was dripping through my clothes and I didn't have a clue what anyone was talking about, was really, really difficult.
That's so tough.
Yeah, it was tough. And I tried to make a joke of it, and I tried to think, well, okay, I'll talk about it because they're not going to get stuffy and funny with me. So maybe if I can start talking about it, then one of my colleagues who is older and going through it might feel a bit more at ease. But it's quite a hostile environment, I think, in a lot of the corporate world. I know a lot of companies are doing a lot. And like I say, the company I worked for were brilliant, but I think in a lot of places it is really difficult. I don't know about you, Claire.
So my boss was great. The organisation I was working at the time, they were less aware of it. It wasn't that they were good or not good, it just almost hadn't crossed their mind as such, I don't know. But I worked in fit out, so construction, project management and fit out, like you, hugely male environment, but a different type of environment. And I was really lucky. The crews, the guys, most people were great. They'd make jokes about it. They'd walk around and fan me or like things that you do. You laugh on the outside, inside you cry a little, but then you're really grateful that they are helping you laugh a little. But that same company now, sort of not long before I left, I had another girl on my team who was going through the menopause, and there were so many resources. I could contact HR, I could put all of this information together, and they were starting to do lots of sort of well women talks and things. So I think there is a slowly changing phase.
So it sounds like it differs employer by employer and kind of space by space, but generally it's moving in the right direction.
From what I've experienced, yeah. It is.
And what's the line for men to tread? If men are listening to this and you were saying they would make a joke and you'd cry a little bit on the inside and you know, and things like that. So how should men behave in this?
I personally think feed off the individual. So, for example, if she's laughing and joking about it, then laugh with her. But if she's not, don't crack a joke. She might not want to laugh about it. And it's quite insulting. But if she's...
Read the room.
But also it's just understand as well that, like, you might hear some women laughing and joking about it. That doesn't mean you can necessarily chime in, because it's kind of like, it's our joke. We might not be ready to open up other people to laugh as well. It's such a difficult, sensitive topic, and that almost sounds like you can't do right.
But everybody is different.
They are.
And that's the same with anything, actually.
Yeah.
So, I actually think, reading the room, I know I said it almost sort of tongue-in-cheek, but that is almost the easiest thing to do. Just look at that person, their body language, what they're saying.
Yeah.
And maybe...
Employ human mode.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, talking of using humour as a coping mechanism, what were your... Actually, let's hold the coping mechanism question. I think Rachel needs to catch up a bit here. Okay. So we left Claire at 34, and we're going to come back to that. So Claire, just to recap, the medical experts had said, yeah, you've gone through perimenopause, you've gone through the menopause, you're postmenopausal, it's all happened in a flash. Then you come back and you have periods for a year.
It's like the hokey cokey, yeah.
Yeah. So Rachel, how did this happen to you?
So my story starts at 34, and I was diagnosed with cancer, and due to cancer treatment, that then meant that I had to be put into a medically induced menopause.
Okay.
So mine happened very quickly. I was really lucky that I got the opportunity to freeze my eggs, although with that came the caveat that the chances of IVF working are very slim, and you can choose to do it, but we're not making any guarantees that it'll work.
And is that because of cancer treatment?
Because of cancer treatment, yeah. Yes, and the future medication that I was going to have to be on for potentially the rest of my life.
So what does, for anyone listening that doesn't understand what medically induced menopause is, what's that?
So medically induced menopause is when you either have medication that stops your ovaries from working, or it can also be if you have a hysterectomy or have your ovaries removed as well. And so in my case, it was chemo was the first thing. So that stopped my periods and I went into the menopause immediately from starting chemo. And then post-chemo, there's a debate, and then, well, for different people it's different. Some people's periods come back and some people can then have children and some can't. And they don't know why, some can and some can't. But in my case, I was then put on medication, which is probably for the rest of my life, which blocks my estrogen and progesterone.
So we've got two things happening, if I've understood correctly. You've got chemo, that's a full stop.
Yeah.
On menstruation, periods, fertility, boom.
Yeah.
And then medication after, ongoing medication after the initial treatment is then limiting estrogen to the point where that's the continued, like, medically induced menopause.
So that keeps me in the menopause,
Okay, that's the phrase I was searching for, keeps you in the menopause. Okay, and that, so this was, I mean, it was pretty rapid for Claire.
This is more rapid.
But this is even faster by the sounds of it. So, like,
what
was the... Did you have time to take stock as to kind of what was changing?
No. So, you get diagnosed I mean, this is a whole nother story, but get diagnosed then and there and sent to the fertility clinic within hours. In my case, it was the end of the day, from 9 a.m. the next morning, I was in the fertility clinic.
Wow.
Getting told, you know, you need to go through this and then start treatment straight away, straight after doing my egg freezing. So you don't really get time to process it. I'll be completely honest, the infertility was the worst part of the whole cancer diagnosis and treatment.
Right.
It floored me. Yeah. Like, and I'd never experienced anger before, and I threw a load of cups at the wall. I was just so angry. I just felt like my whole purpose on this planet is to reproduce. That's your basic reason for being here. And that's been taken away from me.
I completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like a failure as a woman.
Yeah.
You're
exactly.
The one thing that you're meant to be able to do.
Yeah.
That's why I think I said I never accepted it, but tried to make peace with it.
Yes.
Because I know I'd be lying if I ever said I accepted it. I'm one of six kids. My dad's one of six kids. My mum's close family. I imagined a big brood.
Mm.
Okay. So you both had that experience of having something kind of fundamental taken away from your lives that's obviously left then, you know, lots of anger and other negative emotion towards it. Mm. Which, Claire, while you might not accept it, how are you on that journey of kind of making peace with it?
Some years better than others.
Mm.
I think. I don't know. I thought about adoption a lot. And I still think about adoption. I think now, so I had one sort of really poignant moment, just like a little side thing where so 34 basically went back to the gynae. She told me I had, I'd be fine, I had stubborn ovarian syndrome or something, and I would be okay and I could have children and there was no further worry. And then I never had another period after that. So okay. The shock sent my body back into menopause, went back for tests, and I was postmenopausal. So that just neatly caps off kind of that. So
yeah,
that put me there. And then...
particularly challenging. You've had it taken away
from
you twice.
You let yourself be hopeful. That's the bit that is the worst. Try not to get like emotional about it, but... you know, for a few years you've been told you can't have them, and then what now feels like some bastard.
Yeah.
And they're not, right? Has the nerve to tell me I've basically been in like a Bobby Ewing style sleep, whatever it is, and actually I've woken up and I can have children. Well, I couldn't. So I think I had actually a few angry years after that and sabotaged a lot of things in my life. Relationship wise, and I thought to myself, do you know, I'm not going to get into another relationship till I'm in my 40s, till I can meet somebody who's got their own kids, and I'm not going to be looked at in a different way. But what I was going to say was, sorry, is I went round my dad's the day afterwards, and I remember going in and sobbing like a child, just sort of, you know, on him. And he's very old school, and he didn't mean the words he said, he meant to be soothing, but he put his hand on my shoulder and he says, don't worry, darling. Someone will still love you even though you're barren. And I just, the phrase barren has haunted me to this day. I did end my relationship that I was in because I just thought I needed to be figuring some stuff out.
Indeed.
It was a little so
no, thank you.
I don't even know where the question was. Sorry.
Us.
Yeah.
So, not down further down the road in terms of making peace with things.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of struck me there, though, was how little support and advice you got in the first place.
Yeah.
this, you know, you didn't have somebody saying to you, your periods could come back. That could well be a false dawn.
Yeah.
We're going to get you in for more tests. Maybe, and maybe had you been better appraised of what might happen to your body at first, it might not have been like that being held out to you and then taken away from you a second time. So, like, how do you both feel the, your, what's the treatment of early menopause? What's known? How clued up are everybody from GP through to consultant? How's this? Because to me, it feels like, listening to you guys, it feels like a little bit of an unknown world where everyone's kind of reaching around for uncertainty and maybe not grasping it fully.
I mean, I'm quite lucky in the medical world that I'm in, which is that my specialist doctors, their every day is estrogen, progesterone, and like hormone receptors and things like that. So they're really, really supportive. My GP is very honest and says they don't know much, and so refer me back to the hospital. But I'm lucky that I do have that support.
I'm interested, sorry then, because it sounds, what you've lived through, horrendous and such a whirlwind. Someone says, you know, essentially the C word, that's all you hear. And then it's almost like you come out of this a few weeks later and it's not just that, it's, you're unable to, like, have children, you're infertile. Was there support there for that element of it all?
My doctors were very good with that element, because they know that that's what a lot, everybody that walks through their clinic that is young will go through this. So they do have, and the numbers sadly are going up for people getting diagnosed young. So they do have the support there. I think what sometimes maybe people don't understand is that people are so focused on your treatment then and there, and it's like, right, we're going to save your life, this is the focus, and you're like, but you've taken so much away for afterwards, and that's what is so difficult. I was like in fight, I was like a firefighter, I was like in firefighting mode. I was like, I can deal with this now, like, I've got it.
Yeah.
Tell me where to be when, pump me full of all the drugs.
Yeah.
I'm good. But what about the future? And you've taken away my future. But I was really lucky, my doctors were really good, they spoke to me about it, and they still do now. I still see them, we still talk about it.
It's interesting listening to both of you, because the feel, and, you know, I'm not for one moment suggesting that one is any easier than the other, and I'm not even sure if I thought one was easier which one it is anyway.
I don't think one is easier than the other.
Rach, you've had this kind of instantaneous sort of end of fertility happen, but there's a clear and obvious cause. There's cancer, there's cancer treatment, there's medication to prevent the cancer coming back. It's like there's a smoking gun. You know exactly what's happened, as unfair as it feels and as much as it's taken away your future and it's made you so angry, then in that moment it's like it was clear and obvious. Whereas Claire, you've got this, well, what's exactly happening? It might be stress. I mean, I don't really, you know, because it didn't sound like they were finding another cause or a correlation to a set of other symptoms or anything to piece the jigsaw together.
They did lots and lots of tests.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is there, I'm trying to think about, like, how we can help anybody who might be listening. Like, are there some early warning signs that, I'm thinking more maybe Claire here than Rachel, because Rachel had that kind of hard stop, but are there things that start to happen where if you can go and get advice sooner, they might not be able to do anything, but you'd be appraised of what's going on? I don't know.
I don't know, because I guess it depends if you're on a birth control, whether your period is regular because of that, or whether you're not on a birth control and it's regular. I mean, everyone's different. I think if there's a change to what is your normal in anything, you would go and have a word with your doctor and maybe do a sense check to see if anything's different that could have, I don't know, stressed you out. But I don't know. Because it only comes once a month, it sounds silly, you need a few months for it to realise that it's irregular, and that few months could be half a year, which actually is quite a long time. I don't know the answer.
No.
But maybe just know your body, keep aware, and anything that seems different or is unusual, go see your doctor.
And excuse my ignorance here, but if you're on birth control, are you saying that it would be masked even further because the birth control would be giving you a regularity?
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a long time since I took birth control regularly. I think you have a packet, you take the packet, and then you stop for so many days, and so you usually have your cycle.
Yeah.
I don't have a phone to Google to give you an answer. No,
it's quite all right. It was slightly off-piste. In terms of dealing with symptoms, I know there's a lot of people out there, a lot of women out there who will be going through menopause. It could be early, it could be later on in life. This is, as Rachel alluded to, maybe something that isn't discussed as much, but is being discussed a little bit more. Do you guys want to share anything around the reality of symptoms and also any coping mechanisms?
They're real. So I once, when I had a hot flush, got someone to put a digital thermometer to my forehead to see if my temperature went up, and it did. They're real.
Good, all right, so we know they're definitely real.
Yeah. Okay,
so.
You know, we've talked so much about, I guess, what actually happened, but yeah, the symptoms, I don't know about you, but I still have them.
I do as well.
And
so there's a sort of long tail of menopause in terms of the symptoms, if you will.
I think some carry on. I'm really lucky I don't have hot flushes anymore.
Yeah.
But plenty of other symptoms. I can think of one thing specifically around hot flushes is I noticed that whenever I was hungover, my hot flushes would be so bad, like so bad. So it made me cut my drinking down, which obviously was an added bonus for my health. But seriously, like, I had to start writing a note of like when they were happening, and I was like, oh, when I'm hungover, they seem to be happening. And so that would be probably one of my biggest tips, is actually start like writing down like when you waking in the night, when you're having hot flushes, because it might just be that you have a bad week, or it might be, no, this is something.
So this could be around anything. It could be hot flushes, it could be broken sleep, it could be... So on the mood side of things, how does it affect your mood?
I actually used an app at the time, and there was just like the three faces, so smiley face, straight face, unhappy face. And I would just literally tap one as to how I'd been feeling that day.
Yeah.
So that I could gauge an understanding. Weirdly, the mood thing I didn't notice so much, although those around me may well be better placed to ask. Don't know if you would.
I was going to say, I don't think my mood is too bad, but now thinking about it, maybe it was. And I just thought I was great.
Does it tend to be erratic, or would you be of low mood for a continued period of time, like days at a time, or can you be really like high and hyper? Like, how does it?
I did have an onset of sort of anxiety that I've never had before, so that was a whole new thing. Just because, I don't know, the menopause gods thought they'd spice things up a little more. So, in terms of mood, I experienced anxiety for the first time, and then continued to have it on and off for quite a while.
Okay, so it would fluctuate, it would come and go, but it was usually anxiety and back to more of a baseline for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you both said that overwhelmingly the mental, emotional, psychological aspect was far worse than the physical symptoms. So what do you think about your mindset and your attitude to life and your attitude to your futures, because they're not futures that either of you envisaged when you were 25 years of age. Mm. How does that kind of affect symptoms and aspects of early menopause, right?
I think for me, one of the biggest things that I noticed, I mean, don't get me wrong, I had hot flushes and insomnia and all these things, but like you say, I've almost forgotten about those now. The big emotional one for me was I genuinely thought I was going mad. My brain fog, my rationale, the problem solving, like all these things that I could do quite effortlessly before, suddenly I just felt confused all the time, lost all the time, lost everything. I used to be really organised and now I lose everything. And then you start to think you're going crazy.
Yeah.
And then you tell yourself you're a failure again, and all these cycles come back, and yeah, I just felt almost lost. Like, who is this person that I'm not the person that I know anymore? And that was probably the hardest thing, other than the infertility. That was probably the hardest thing for me.
So losing your sense of self.
Yeah.
Alongside the infertility is far more impactful than
I think so.
Hot flushes and sweating through your clothes in a meeting or waking up in the night.
You can laugh about, you know, sweating and waking in the night. Yeah, the fatigue is unreal. I personally managed to find coping mechanisms with that, and that's fine. But the thinking you're going crazy. You know, you start questioning yourself at work. Am I doing a good enough job? Am I good enough in my relationship? And am I going mad?
It's a level of detail you weren't aware your brain was capable of thinking about, isn't it? It's
like, yeah.
Oh. Now I'm asking myself these questions. But yeah,
I agree. I want to end the podcast today by getting some practical advice and then some emotional advice. So if practically, in terms of mitigating symptoms, and Rachel, you just mentioned some coping strategies for insomnia, for example, but whatever it might be, like diet, lifestyle advice, what's three bits of advice that you'd give to anybody who is going through the menopause at any stage in life, and then we'll come back for something else. So do you want to give me three bits of advice first on the kind of physical, lifestyle, diet side of things?
The first, I guess, with insomnia. Now, I don't know if this is right for everybody. This was prescribed by my GP, but works really well. Is I take drowsy antihistamines at night. So I have to take antihistamines anyway. And so he recommended take the drowsy ones at night. And that really helped with my sleep. I was really battling waking up every night for a couple of hours. And so that really, really helped. And whether it was a placebo or not, I don't know, but it works. So yeah. I don't care. So obviously check if you can do that. But just thinking, I didn't want to take sleeping tablets or any more chemicals. So that was quite important to me. So that worked for me. And like I say, it may have even been a placebo, but it helped me.
Okay, so drowsy antihistamines.
Yeah.
Drink less alcohol.
Drink less alcohol.
What's your third bit of advice?
I think my third bit of advice was really talking to people about it. Like I say, when I was at work, I'd joke about the fact that I was struggling in meetings, and like I told my partner, why do I lose everything? I mean, I packed my phone in a suitcase on holiday and like sent my suitcase off. And just we laugh and joke about it. And I felt so stupid. It was right at the beginning of our relationship as well. So I was really embarrassed. But you know what? Just be open and honest and say, this is something I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody is really there to support you and help you. And
great.
Yeah.
And Claire, any tips around exercise or foods to eat, foods not to eat? supplements, any joy you've had on that side of things?
So I kind of, my sort of three things were the Holy Trinity, which I called as one, which is sleep, diet and exercise.
Yeah.
Avoid any major like sugar highs or extremes of anything that's going to impact you, depending on what you like. Petal, have those people around you. Talk to people, not necessarily in a serious way, but just have your good mates that you can talk to and know that you can speak to them, and then have boundaries and don't be afraid to gently reinforce those boundaries, because there is such a thing as over talking about whatever someone is going through. So you want to be able to share enough talk, but then be comfortable in sort of putting those boundaries in. Supplement wise, I do take a magnesium to help me sleep in the evening, but otherwise I don't really take anything.
So what's the Holy Trinity? Sleep,
diet and exercise.
Okay, lovely.
If I have all of those in check, then what that does is generally keeps my mental health in check, and from that platform I can do everything else.
Okay.
And also to say, we focus quite a lot on the experience, but now, almost 10 years on, I am at peace with it. And I do see, and I'm already experiencing a new path that I've chosen. It just took a beat to get there, right? And to think about it. So I guess the things that other people are going through in 10 years' time, Rach and I had that.
Yeah.
A lot earlier, so we were just different amongst our peers.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think, you know, you can get past it and you can learn to deal with it, and the anger does dilute and you can move on and you can create your new path.
That's a lovely, positive, thoughtful way for us to end. So thank you very much, Claire. Thank you, Rachel. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks.